Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, a weekly podcast talk show about passion, flow, and creativity. So while the topics may change, the heart behind it remains the same. I'm your host, Aaron Holman, and our guest today is...
Zachary Landolt.
Zachary, happy you were able to join us today.
Oh, of course, I have nothing going on.
Well, let's get started. That's awesome. I'm so happy that you were able to join us on the podcast today. Thank God that you had nothing going on.
I mean, I would have been happy to be on it regardless. I just also happen to have nothing going on. Well, and you came on my podcast, so I figure I'd return the favor.
So Zachary is the host of In Another World podcast. You are a gay man. You are a musical theater aficionado, I would say.
Well, I've been describe saying your that.
Okay. Fair enough. Please then do describe yourself for the listeners. How do you describe
yourself? How do I? I always just say I'm a pop culture nerd because I nerd out about many things. Like I nerd out about musical theater, but I love drag culture. I love film culture. I love even trashy reality TV culture. I don't intake as much of it as other people in the gay community, but I do still find it fascinating. You know, pop music, all sorts of nonsense. So my show is kind of like an explosion of all of that. So every different episode is a different pop culture topic, and we just kind of get into it. And I like to make little either trivia or games that are based on the topic each week. So it's just supposed to be like a nice, silly, fun time.
Well, I think in this day and age, it is something that is not applauded enough. Just creating something that is good, fun, to digest. And
I struggle with it, to be totally honest.
What do you mean?
Because, well, there are times where I think, like, I know I'm creating the show to be, like, a fun escapism vehicle, and I do see the value in that, but there are times where I think, is this coming off, like, flippant or, like, not connected with the world? Because there's a lot going on right now. So, you know, I always try to make sure I have my heart. I mean, I know my heart is in the right place, but I don't know. It's just a struggle when you put content out there with your name and your face on it.
Correct.
Because you know, I'm human. I'd want to be perceived the correct way. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that. But
I understand exactly what you're talking about. For me, one of my biggest fears in life is being misunderstood and, you know, creating content like we're doing. And then releasing it to the masses, what you're guaranteed is that you will be misunderstood.
Oh, for sure.
And you know, that's hard.
Yeah, I think for me, you can't, you don't want to be performative with your activism.
Correct.
And so I know that I give money to organizations. I know that I am like keeping informed. So I can't be obsessed with like, making sure I'm posting enough things or saying, you know.
Your support does not need to be publicized.
No. Like, granted, I like using my voice so that people can know about the things that I would never want to be someone that cares so much about their quote unquote image that they're staying disconnected from their core values. Because I'm not a fan of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. As long as I'm not doing that. You know, we're all doing our best. We're trying to.
Yeah.
If for now I can offer a fun show that makes people giggle, you know, then that's good with me.
So going back to your passion of culture, what was the first sort of big moment that began you on the journey of being obsessed with it?
Oh my God. There's lots of little sparks, but I definitely in general, I grew up in the Deep South, and not only in the Deep South, but I grew up like in the country in the Deep South. Like I didn't live in a suburb. I didn't live near a lot of neighbors or anything. So I was sort of left, and my sister did not care for me until later in life. So I was kind of alone a lot, which it might sound sad, but it didn't feel sad at the time. It just felt like I would create my own fun. Like I was a big reader when I was a child, and I would just go into the woods with like a backpack that had like a sketchbook, like some snacks and like maybe a book and a stuffed animal. And I would just go walk in the woods and like And so I think it sparked the creative. And so I always saw media as something to take me to a different place because I was bored in my little corner of the world. So I got into movies and musicals. There's
what was the first movie you were obsessed with?
First movie? Mm-hmm. I know the first movie I saw in the theater was Hook. I don't know if you...
Robin Williams.
Yeah. And so I remember thinking that was the coolest movie in the world. I'm trying to think, that came out in 91, so I was about four.
Yes, that one's still incredibly, incredibly good.
Oh, I still loved it. And I had like the action figures. I was obsessed with the idea of like, what if someone found out they were a mythical, character, and they just got to, you know, so I felt like maybe my dad...
Maybe it's me. Like, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Like, there's something really magical about that. And the way that the children were seen as like equals in that movie and they weren't talked down to, mm-hmm. like children usually are in films about children. Yeah. So I don't know. That was a big one for sure.
Mm-hmm. Very early on, one of the first movies that made a huge impact on me, it was not mm-hmm. necessarily in the positive way. We talked about this on your show. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out when I was young. And so yeah. that's like one of the first movies I actually remember. But first movie that made a big impact and still carries to this day. I remember I stayed up late one night and I could not have been more than 7 years old. And I snuck out to the living room, hid behind the couch and literally watched the movie from, you know, peeking out behind a couch the entire time, sometimes behind the armchair. And yeah, and for me it was the movie that I it was the original Amityville Horror.
Oh no.
I know. And so room with the flies and the priest, the cross is turning upside down, the basement filling with blood.
Yeah.
That is where my love for like horror cinema has come from. Because to this day, and I'll ebb and flow, but overall, I do really enjoy the thrill of being scared.
Oh, same. For mm-hmm. sure.
And I think I can really, it's probably because of that, you know? And the fact that I still sat there and watched it. Yeah, I was scared, but I couldn't look away and I had to see what happened when the basement filled up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, for me, I'm not a fan of heights or being not in control of my physical body. So I'm not a big fan of like roller coasters and stuff like that. So I do think horror movies give me that adrenaline rush that you usually would get from things of that nature. But to mm-hmm. me, it's watching a really scary movie where I'm like, oh my God, when you just start giggling because you know you're about to scream, you're like, oh God, it's about to happen. you know, I loved that. Because I think I remember the first movie that got me into horror movies. It's not even a very good movie. It's known for being a bad movie. I remember my parents were watching The Blob.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, so stupid. Like, yeah, but as dumb. A kid, I was like, oh, something could overtake us and like eat our bodies, you know, so scary when I was a child. But I remember I was terrified, mm-hmm. but I still was like, I remember I was laying down in the hallway because the way the hallway was, it was like past the couch and the chair, but you could still see the TV. So I would, lay down the hallway because that way if they heard something I could still sneak over to my bedroom door really quickly. And they're watching The Blob, and then I was and then I was scared of The Blob, but I couldn't talk to my mom about having nightmares about The Blob because then she would know that I like snuck out and watched it. So it was like my own little private like I'm so scared. And I was just like very hugging my I had a like panda bear stuffed animal, and I'm like, I'm just gonna squeeze my stuffed animal.
That is amazing. Besides the podcast, what are some other passions of yours?
Well, usually performing, because I am an actor and a singer. And it's funny, this year is supposed to be my big, like, throwing myself back into performing. And I have been cast in a few shows. I was getting ready for a real, like, exciting, like, resurgence of my performing life for the first time in the past couple of years when I've been working my, like, survival job more than my, like, passions jobs. And then this year happened, so it kind of got, like, put on break. Mm-hmm. So normally I would say it's theater. I do mostly theater. I'm trying to get into more film. I'm actually about to start taking a voiceover class also to try to get into voiceover. So I guess just expression and yeah, performance. That's usually my passion. And mm-hmm. since those were kind of taken away from me this year, that's where the podcast kind of came from.
Yeah.
Because it's something else to, I think as creatives, if you're not using that part of your brain, you just start to go crazy and you're like, why am I in such a bad mood? And you realize it's because you're just repressed in a way that other people might not feel that same pain. Like, I'm sure they have that towards something else, mm-hmm. but yeah, not having performing has been tough this year.
Yeah,
for sure.
What is your background with performing? When did that begin for you?
So it's so weird. There are times where I wish I'd grown up in a suburb or something, and like other kids were going to drama camp and stuff, and I could have been like, oh my god, I want to go to drama camp. But I just wasn't around other kids. My parents weren't, I mean, they're around like the kids of the people they were friends with, but none of them happened to also be interested in performing arts like me. And I didn't even know how to verbalize what I wanted to do for the longest time. Like, I knew I had something I wanted to do. Like, I took all the art classes and I always enjoyed taking art and I was decent at it. Like, I can still like doodle and stuff, but I'm not like a brilliant artist, but I still felt like there was a way I wanted to express myself. But I'm like, well, I like art class, but it's not art. And I tried to take violin and I wasn't very good at the violin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, what is going on? And then I remember we went to go see a production of Peter Pan at a local theater when I was probably in like third grade, fourth grade.
It's like the most magical show there is.
My God, yeah. And also I was with Hook. Like, Hook was like the first movie I saw. So I thought, oh my God, it's like Hook on stage. That's Peter Pan. And of course, I had to pretend like I thought it was stupid, you know, like all the other boys in the class. Like, God, this is so dumb. And I'm like, yeah, this is really dumb. But like, stop talking. They're singing. And I remember when I was in fifth grade, I saw a little news clipping for a drama camp that was going to be at the local theater in this town right by where I grew up, and I convinced my parents to let me go. And it was just like a day camp. Like, you just went for like the day, did like a whole theater intensive. But I remember like leaving that little day camp and thinking, oh, I think that's it. I think that's what I want to do. And then it just kind of started in high school. That's when it really started to like, because we didn't really have a drama department in middle school to even get involved in. So once I knew there was, I happened to go to an amazing high school as far as having a drama program. And so that's kind of where it all sparked was, yeah, like probably like 13, 14.
Nice. That was about the same time it did for me. And I think what drew myself to it was I wasn't comfortable expressing, I guess these gay feelings that I'd had inside my head since like third grade, you know, and I was just uncomfortable where I lived. I grew up in central Louisiana. So, very backwoods as well. And while I loved it, I didn't feel safe expressing myself fully. And that was why I went to theater, because this was a place where the louder I was, the more flamboyant that I could be, that's like the better roles I'm going to get.
Yeah.
It was a much happier place. I can definitely understand.
I definitely struggled with that as well, because I say I started acting when I was 13, but I don't think I was good at it until probably like 19, because I was so self-conscious about like my body, like both in terms of it's my body itself, because I was like I had a weird trajectory where I was a skinny child, like a skinny child up until about middle school. Then I was like the awkward chubby kid through middle school, through like early high school. Then I kind of like randomly got fit like later in high school. So I've been on a whole up and down journey my whole life. And even like now, like I got really fit for about a year and a half, and then like I went through a bad breakup last year, and now I'm like on the upswing. So it's been a whole thing. So like going into acting and having my body be on stage and be like, everyone, look at my body. That's already stressful enough for a young kid. But then when you also are, you know, you're gay and you're trying so desperately to not come off gay on stage, even though later in life I'd find out that I will be funnier if I just lean into my natural strengths. But so I'd always be like, oh, make sure you're keeping your arms stiff and make sure your hands aren't like going all over the place. Yeah, make sure you have, it's like, in all, and so you're thinking about all that so much, there's no room to be a good actor because you're so self-conscious that you're not in the moment and performing. So I think as I became more confident in myself, or just more accepting of who I was, you know, because I did finally come out like to my friends in like junior year of high school. And I think that's when I started to become a better performer, because I was just finally being myself on stage. Yeah. So it was a whole journey.
What it sounds like is you were playing a role already. You were already acting, you know, you were, while even doing these other roles, you were already performing straight. And that took up all the space.
Yeah.
Once you had to let that go, it freed you up to be able to go different places with the character.
Well, I even went on a whole journey with my voice, because a lot of people were kind of stunned when I even started singing when I was a teenager, because to many of my friends, they're like, since when do you sing? Like, we never have heard you sing like ever. And I still struggle with this, where like, I grew up with my sister, and I love my sister to death, but she is the stronger personality of the two of us. So when she wanted to like be a singer and be musical, like she was just going to do that. She wasn't even going to think about people's opinions, blah, blah, blah. And so her thing really became like, oh, Vanessa has the most beautiful singing voice. Vanessa is very, very talented. And she is very, very talented. But so me, that already kind of was in the shadow of my older sister, and we didn't get along better until like we were teenagers, I kind of suppressed any, I think I could tell I could sing, like, because I would sing along with like cassette tapes in my room and be like, I think I don't sound bad. Like, granted, that could not mean anything, but I was so nervous to even sing in front of anybody that I just kind of kept it to myself for the longest time. And even after I went to a theater camp when I was 14, I was invited to come audition for a production of Pirates of Penzance. And I was so nervous to do the audition that I went inside, pretended I left something in the car and left. And then my dad's like, wait, is the audition over? And I was like, oh yeah, I just sang at the very beginning, so I guess I'll know in a couple of days if anything happens. And I just like never, I just said I didn't get cast in it. Oh, I know. And then later, well, and actually that was a whole learning experience though, because I remember at the time I walked into that room, I looked around at all the people in the room and I thought, oh my gosh, all these people are so much more like together and polished than I am. And then I ended up working with that theater later a lot and knew all the people in that room. And so in retrospect, I'm like, all of those people in that room are not perfect. They're not even all, not to be crude, not even all that talented. Yep. So I was like nervous about maybe like, you know, a couple of people that I would actually consider like extra talented, but also none of them would have been there like, oh my god, this kid. Like, granted, my audition, thank god I did not do it, because it was gonna be a hot mess. Like, I actually think the universe was doing me a solid by like not letting me have to experience that embarrassment, because I remember my sister had been in the musical Once Upon a Mattress when I was,
love that show, I've been in,
right,
that.
I actually love it. And I was obsessed with the music from it, because I, again, had no culture to take in. So I had her cast album that she had from that show. So I would just listen to it over and over and over again. And there's a number in that show where the prince is singing with his mute father. And it's like a duet where he's like singing with no one, because the king doesn't sing.
Yeah.
It's not a song you would ever do for an audition, because it's not, it has no range. It makes no sense out of context, but that's what I was about to do for this audition. And I think I would have died from embarrassment.
Listen, I love that choice. You're going for the deep cut from Once Upon a Mattress.
Oh, no. But it wasn't even like, I'm in love with a girl named Fred. Like, you know, it wasn't even like something that's an actual song. It was like, I was like, I remember he's like trying to learn about where babies come from and like love and marriage. It just, oh my God.
Yeah, that's not even a good, I didn't enjoy that song.
No, oh no, it's, I don't know why I did it. I think it's going like, oh, well, that's a boy song and it'll make the most sense. I think I thought like, oh, it'll be like acting, because I'm like reacting off of what my dad's telling me.
You were saved from this potentially embarrassing or life-changing experience.
Or life-changing.
How did you overcome the fear to then go back? And how do you overcome the fear of using your voice today?
And that's still a journey. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm still not, if someone says, oh, you sing? Oh, sing something. Like, that's, I'm not good with someone being like, oh, cool, you sing. Sing in front of all of us right now. Like, actually, I'm better in that respect if it's a room full of people than if it's like 10 people or under. That's when it just gets like, I don't like this. I can see everybody that's looking at me. But in terms of performing, I went through a whole thing, because I remember after that audition, I went, you know, to high school and took drama classes, obviously. And I think as I got more comfortable there, I finally wasn't scared to even go and audition at all. But even then, like, my first audition there was like not the best. I at least got cast in the show I was auditioning. First of all, I would quickly find out if you are a boy in the theater, if you're even mildly talented, you will probably get cast in the show.
Which, very, you know, likely a lead.
Very like, well, not always, because I went to theater camp and we were doing Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella. Mm-hmm. And I remember they're like, you're going to get a lead because you're a young boy that like doesn't look 10. And I thought, yeah, I've never done a play before, but I'm about to get a lead. And then of course I didn't get a lead. I was probably like, dreadful, because I'm sure all they saw were my nerves, because I was such an introverted little wallflower. So when you try to change yourself from being a wallflower to literally being an actor on stage, it's like showing off your personality. It's a big switch to make.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, and eventually I would find the joy with that, where I would say, well, you know, for like 2 hours, I'm not me on stage. I'm this character. So anything weird I do, or anything, it's something I'm choosing to do, and I'm like getting laughs and people are enjoying it and no one's looking at me, like, you know. And I think once my brain got that, I just found more confidence. But it was a long journey. It was, I definitely wish I could have started acting earlier. But I don't know, like, I think growing up a gay kid in the South, not to keep bringing that up, but like,
it's,
I think it relevant. Was a big part of like gaining confidence on stage, because it was accepting, like, you know what, if somebody happens to think I'm gay, like, I think I would, and that's a big thing. It creates another negative thing of like equating like looking gay with being like not good, or like something that someone's making fun of, or something that's not right, quote unquote. And I had to disconnect from that too. Like, I'm actually at a big place in my career right now where I want to be an unapologetic gay actor and stop being obsessed with like, okay, how can I play the straight cop that's like talking to the lieutenants in the office? Like, you know, of course I want to be an actor and play different things, but I'm also like, I naturally am more femme in my voice, in my mannerisms. And it's something that makes people like I am a funny person. Like, you know, I know how to make that funny, like not making fun of those traits, but I know how to be funny as me as a performer. And it's like, you're going to find more strength by leaning into the things that make you fundamentally you than trying to force yourself into the box of something that you're fundamentally not, you know. And everyone's different with how they approach that as an actor, but I am just at a place where I'm like, well, I kind of want to be a gay character actor. Like, I've never played gay on stage before, other than I was in La Cage aux Folles and I played a drag queen. But I wasn't like a lead or anything. I was just like in the ensemble. So it's not like I got to have like a deep exploration of the gay experience in that show. I just happened to be a character that I assumed to be gay. But other than that, I've never played gay on stage. That's a big, and I was going to finally get to do that this year. I was cast in the Laramie Project and I was very excited to do that. And I think it's still happening next year. That is the next phase of my career I would like to go into, leaning more into the gay side.
Well, it is my belief that our strengths and weakness, like our greatest one on each side, I think it's the same thing. And here's why I think that. It can be your weakness because it can be exploited and it can be the thing that gets you pigeonholed. But at the same time, if you know how to transform it, take it away from people who would try to do that with it to you, and instead celebrate it, make it your strength. It can be very successful. You know, it's not necessarily about being gay, but like, look at what Bernadette Peters did for herself. She doesn't sound like anybody else. Her voice.
I think that's why I loved her so much.
I think it's why the world loved her so much. Because she said, I'm going to be unapologetically me.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. I don't really care. I'm getting work.
Well, and look at someone like Liza Minnelli. Like, you know, she had kind of a limited Hollywood career because she was just like, I'm Liza Minnelli. You know, she was like, she couldn't not be that.
Yeah.
And so, like, she was never going to be in, like, some serious drama where she's just like, honey, listen, like, you know, like,
it just, it was never gonna be, no, none of that.
And I mean, I love her for that. She is a big over-the-top personality, and like, I that's why she's perfect in Cabaret. It's like a perfect performance of hers captured on film. But someone like that, like, she works better on stage. I think that's why I was so into Broadway culture when I was younger, because it was all these like over-the-top personalities. Like, you don't see as many of them now, but like back in the day, I was really into Elaine Stritch. I was into mm-hmm. Angela Lansbury, Bernadette Peters.
Absolutely.
I mean, Patti LuPone, you know, just Patti LuPone, I think, is the, in terms of like who we have to look at now, mm-hmm. is probably the closest thing to that kind of personality. Because like Patti LuPone is Patti LuPone. It takes a lot for Patti LuPone to disappear from being Patti LuPone, because she yeah. just has such a definitive personality,
aura, and presence. She's one of my all-time favorite people. The second I see her show up on screen or on stage or wherever, I immediately tell everybody around me to shut up. I'm like, shut up, it's Patty.
Oh, like, when she showed up for Pose season 2 and I got out of the car, I was like, oh my god,
Patty, listen, thank god they found a way to incorporate that character into the Cabaret at the hospital.
Yeah.
That right there.
You know, I wanted to be a singer.
Did she do, what was it? Did she do I'm Still Here?
Yes, I'm Still Here.
What a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, right. In context of the show, that was rude.
Oh, really awful. Oh, she turned out to be, like, just truly awful.
But again, thank God that they found a spot for her to sing. Oh,
God bless.
Unlike what they did with, who is it? Idina Menzel in Enchanted. They just didn't use her for singing. I think that is one of the biggest missed opportunities. Oh,
it's a crime. It's a crime.
And I'm going to say it right here on the podcast right now. It's a crime.
I remember thinking, oh, it's a movie musical and Idina Menzel's in it, so she must have a musical number. And even at the end, when she turned into the animated version of herself, I thought, oh, here's where the song's going to come. And then no song ever came. So it was just weird. It was
but strange. You know what? She got frozen, so...
Maybe that's how she got frozen. Maybe they're like, oh, Idina.
Sorry, Idina. We forgot you could sing.
Oh, I do love that movie, I have to say.
Oh, Enchanted? Me
yeah,
too.
I love
Amy
it.
Amy Adams is a gift.
And James Marsden. He's an underrated little musical theater performer. I wish he would do a movie musical.
I wish he'd go to Broadway.
Oh, like, same.
You know, because I think he has the ability to do it.
I think he could play Bobby and Company in a film version if he was, like, you know, I think that could work. Though at this point, if they were going to make a Company movie, I feel like they would probably cast Jake Gyllenhaal.
I don't,
because he's like famous enough to be a film actor.
I know, and he's on his Sondheim kick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it to be him. I don't want Jake Gyllenhaal to be Bobby.
That'd be fine. I mean, he would definitely have the good looks part to be like, you understand why all these, you know, women.
Yeah, but you know, Sondheim did eventually, like just a couple years ago, he did eventually come out and say that Bobby was written from the perspective of being a gay man.
And I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
I don't want Jake Gyllenhaal to do it again.
I know.
He already got Brokeback Mountain, and that was a hard enough pill for me to swallow from the two of them. You know,
I will say, I was impressed with him in that movie because he did something that I don't see a lot of straight actors do, which is he really sold the, like, romantic intimacy of how much he cared for him. Like, it didn't just feel like, I want to kiss you. It was like... he felt tender in a way that was very authentic, in a way that took me a couple years to be like, I don't know, is he that good of an actor? Like, he must be a little gay. Like, you know, he's just a very good actor.
I think, I guess what it is I would rather see James Marsden, like you said, for Bobby, and give Jake Gyllenhaal, remake Sunday in the Park with George. I think the audiences could actually accept a movie of that. And if it was done right, and I believe that we have the technology to do something like that right, it would be a fantasy.
It would have to be a crazy movie, like a really absurdist.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Get Julie Taymor to direct it, you know, and like let it go crazy.
Like Julie Taymor, like Spike Jones or someone maybe.
Yeah, let it be a fantasy.
Yeah.
Because I think the way that he and Annalee Ashford handle that music is brilliant. Yeah, it's just my own opinion.
Oh, no, sure.
But I'm also super protective of company. I don't know.
Oh, I know.
I don't want him to get the credit. I don't know why.
Ideally, I would like to see James Marsden do it more because mm-hmm. I think his voice would sound better on that music, first of all.
Yep.
And he has that, I mean, James Marsden, I know he's like a little older than that character's supposed to be, but he still looks like, you know, mm-hmm. good as fuck. Like, I mean, yeah. I would still get down with James Marsden in this moment.
Always. In this day and age, it's more important than ever to invest in our local economy. If you live in the US, or better yet, in Yakima, luckily you can do that while treating yourself to something sweet. Isn't it time you try a little different flavor? Pika Nika Candies is a Facebook shop specializing in the new Pika candy craze. They take your favorite candies, dried fruit, and even nuts and cover them in a homemade tangy lime coating. If you're ready to take it to the next level, you can ask them to season your candies with a kick of extra spice. Pika Nika creates candy packages, dessert kebabs, and candy tables for your special event needs. Make sure to like and follow Pika Nika Candies on Facebook. Message them directly to place orders or talk about custom packages. Stay spicy, Pika peeps. Going back to your podcast, what is it like for you creating an episode of that? How do you go about your work? Because you are a workhorse.
Here's the thing. I've been so lazy for so long because before I had my podcast, I had nothing to do. Like my shows were canceled. My job was over. And I'm still technically unemployed from COVID. So I had nothing to fill my time with. And so I think when I took on that project, I didn't realize how much my brain was starved for that. So what it usually starts off as is I usually have like just natural sparks of inspiration. I'll think, oh, it'd be fun to do this or that. But I have learned what I need to do with myself. If I have an idea, I need to instantly write it down or like put it into an outline. So what I do is I have an outline on my desktop at any moment that just has like, it's just literally called like episode concepts or ideas. And I just will just type it into the page and it might look like nothing at the time. Like I have some where it's like SNL episode, you know, episode about character actresses you don't know the names of. Like, you know, I have lots of like just little random ideas like that. And then from there, I'll sort of start to like type out an outline. And then I just let it all marinate in a big soup. And whichever one I am the most inspired by first, I'll like pull those out. What I've been doing is I'll prep like 3 or 4 episodes at a time. So I go, okay, this one is going to be this. This one is this. And I'll even try to think of like a working title for it. Because having a working title for an episode, for some reason, really sparks some sort of creative thing in me. Because then I start to get a feel for the concept. And my big thing with my show, and I think I always knew I wanted to do this, but it's really sort of solidified as the format, is I do want to have some sort of a game for every episode.
I love your game.
So then I start thinking about the game with the concept and how do I connect the two. And that sort of like helps everything take shape. But some are quicker than others. Like some might have an instant idea for what the game's going to be. And then they're like, I had an interview with someone a couple days ago where it was like the day before the interview. And I think I messaged you and I said, I don't know what I'm going to play. They need a game, but I don't know what to do. And then, you know, luckily you gave an idea / inspiration and it luckily turned out good. It's all just a process.
It's interesting for me to hear you say it's just funny because we're creating something similar, but an episode will be, the episode name is like the last thing I get. It is one of the last, it is after I have finished editing the episode and it is scheduled to be released. I go back and I listen to it and I find my title at the end.
Maybe that's better. Like, I don't know which is the better thing. Like, I have been thinking I need to start being more creative with my titles and not going for the obvious title. You know, like, I still haven't figured out exactly what my, like, running theme for how I choose the titles are. It's always a little different. Like, sometimes it's more, like, straightforward. Other times it's just, like, you know, something more tongue-in-cheeky. I don't know. I try to always have it be some sort of, like, fun. I want it to sound a little gay or a little you know, a little flamboyant, and it's, I don't want it to sound too stuffy, because I want it to be kind of silly. I want the whole thing to be kind of goofy and a little not serious, you know.
Besides people, what are some of your other inspirations or influences that help you create your show? I know, like, it's culture. So I guess, like, I'm asking you to pick out some big pieces of culture that have influenced you.
I can tell you the movies I'm still the most inspired by in terms of something about the tone, the comedy, the blah, blah, blah. And it's a weird mix, but, like, it's everything from, like, Clueless to... I love the 90s slasher movies with, like, Scream Queens. Like, I mean, I was absolutely addicted to the Scream trilogy when that was coming out. Like, that was it. Like, I was into that.
Neve Campbell is huge.
She was in The Craft also. Like, she also had The Craft. Like, come on.
And have you seen the cult classic Reefer Madness?
Oh, yeah, and she got to dance in it.
Because the reason she did not have a bigger part in that is because the lead actor is Christian Campbell, her brother. Mm-hmm, and so they couldn't kiss. And, I mean, that woman has been dancing since her birth. And
oh, yeah, have you seen The Company?
No.
Oh, my God. She did this movie. It was in, like, 2003, and it was with one of my favorite film directors, Robert Altman, who did lots of... His style was very, like, naturalistic, like, observing human lives and, like, letting the audience be almost like a fly on the wall. That's how he always thought of his films being. And she had always wanted to make a film about the Joffrey Ballet, and she just pitched it to him, and they sort of fashioned the script together. And the big thing of it was that she was going to obviously do all the dancing because she is a dancer.
Yeah.
And so she just literally trained with the Joffrey Ballet for, like, a month. Like, would just be, like, doing normal company classes sessions and stuff. And she was very big with the director about saying, now, listen, this is not going to be one of those dance movies where, like, I'm the star and it's about me becoming a star. All that happens is that I get a couple more principal dance parts in the season, and it's about my growth as an artist, but the movie's not about me. Like, it's not just about me. So it's this very, like, ensemble piece that happens to have Neve Campbell, but she has these gorgeous dance sequences. There's one to, like, My Funny Valentine, and it's sort of like a modern ballet little pas de deux, and it's amazing. You should watch it.
I'm into it. I'm literally, like, that's what I'm doing this afternoon.
It's a beautiful movie. It's the closest, yeah, you could get to being just, like, a fly on the wall in, like, a company's, like, season in the Joffrey. And it's just, and it has a little bit of dramatic, it's a little bit of the mundane, a little bit of the ridiculous characters you find in the dance world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I think also, you know, another big culture thing for me was, I remember I saw the movie Moulin Rouge when I was, you know, like 13, something like that. Yeah, about 13. And then I was obsessed with Baz Luhrmann. So I, like, went back and watched his other movies, like, mm-hmm. Strictly Ballroom. Obviously, I'd seen Romeo and Juliet. And I think I was drawn to him because he can't help but have his style be on something. Like, you know, it's a Baz Luhrmann production if you're watching it, because it's just a little bombastic, a little colorful,
saturated, yeah, you know, like jewel tones over the top.
And it's not even always my favorite thing, but it's never boring. Like, it's never like The Great Gatsby. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but there are sections of that movie that I think are really, really interesting, and I'm at least entertained as an audience member. So I think I've just always, I've been attracted to art that feels like it's trying to do something where it doesn't fit into a box, like something that feels like a new thing. Like another example, like a modern example, when I saw the movie Booksmart last year with, it was Beanie Feldstein and Caitlin Deaver, and it was about these two girls in high school, and it was like their last day of high school. It was basically like a modern woke version of Superbad. It was like basically the plus Superbad almost, except, but it was so different because it had queer representation, like diverse cast, but it wasn't about any of those things. They just happened to be the kid, because like kids now, that's it's a different cult. I can't even imagine what that's like in high school, to just have to be gay and have that not be the topic of every conversation. Like, Like when I came out in high school, I was instantly almost like a little mini celebrity, literally just because I was gay. Like I had so many people like, hey, so my cousin, he's also, you know, like you, and he's really cute. And I just wanted to know if I could give him your number. And I'd be like, you don't know me. Like all you know about me is I'm the me that's always walked down the hallway, only now I'm gay. And, you know, it's so weird. Like I could have given in to my interests as a teen and probably been whatever kind of version of a gay guy I wanted to be. But for some reason I was at first like obsessed with being like, well, no, like I'm gay, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not like stereotypical gay, you know, like I listen to Nina Simone and, you know, like I watch indie films. Like I don't listen to pop music and stuff. And so I don't know what I was trying to prove to myself or anyone else, but I feel like now, like me at age 33, I'm kind of having my like second adolescence that I've sort of read about, like queer second adolescence, where now like I have pink accent walls in my room. I listen to mostly, you know, pop music, primarily female vocalists. And it's sort of like I'm allowing myself to enjoy all the things that I wasn't allowed to when I was a teen, you know.
Being more comfortable in one's skin and being able to express it how one would like. You mentioned enjoying indie films when you were a young closeted gay boy. And yes. I can relate. So tell me, what was your most watched one?
Okay, most watched. I mean, I watched a lot of weird things. Like I remember I watched this movie called The Station Agent with this Patricia Clarkson and Bobby Cannavale, and then it had Peter Dinklage before Peter Dinklage had done, you know, obviously Game of Thrones or anything. I think I was really into, yeah, little intimate character study dramas or character study like dramedies, because they just felt different than like, even if they were like a little pretentious in a different way, but they felt less stuffy as like American studio films. So I'd watch like I watched like all sorts of trash. Like, I mean, I was really into Nicole Kidman for a while. I mean, I'm still obsessed with Nicole Kidman, but I was like, she does a lot of indie films. So I remember watching Dogville by Lars von Trier. I remember watching her in Birth. Yeah, I remember watching Dancer in the Dark by Lars von Trier with Bjork. It's a nuts movie.
Some of the big ones we've discussed: Romance and Cigarettes before. That was huge. Yes. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, of course, still affects me to this day. Kate Winslet in both of those movies. Dear God. I think my most watched one, and you know, judge me for what it's worth, but I love every single moment of this film. Elizabethtown.
Okay, so just think. I love Kirsten Dunst. I actually think she's perfect. My favorite.
And Susan Sarandon.
You know my biggest problem with that movie?
Orlando Bloom?
I thought he was miscast. And not to go full circle, but actually it was supposed to be Jake Gyllenhaal. He was supposed to be the lead in that. And I think that would have been the piece that would have fixed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have made that movie, mainstream successful.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think Susan Sarandon is so great in that, but I wish there was more of her. Like, I think Kirsten Dunst is great, but she has no chemistry with Orlando Bloom. Like she's a great actress, and so she makes it work for me, but I think a different actor.
I'm
only
believing it when I'm watching her. I'm like, when I'm watching her look at him, I believe the love. You're right.
Well, speaking of Kirsten Dunst, that also reminds me, I also was obsessed with Sofia Coppola. So I loved watching Lost in Translation, The Virgin Suicides, like, you know, anything where like 90% of the movie is no dialogue and it's just like light dialogue. And it's very quiet. And it's all about like moody music and like 4-word sentences. And then they talk again in 10 minutes, you know, like... Because so much of Lost Translation is like Bill Murray lying in his hotel room and thinking about calling Scarlett Johansson. And finally, 10 minutes goes by. He's like, hey, you want to meet up for a drink? Yeah. Yeah, let's grab me a drink. And like, it's such a quiet movie. But for some reason, it was so relaxing. Oh, I thought like, that's brilliant. That's artistically brilliant. They don't need
words.
That's
genius. It's the space between the words.
Yeah. I remember when like everyone was trashing Marie Antoinette, and I was like, you guys didn't get that movie. Like, it's actually really good. And I do think people have woken up on that movie over time. They've gone, oh, it actually had a lot to say. And I'm like, I told you. Mm-hmm. I told you.
So before we move on to our final section of things, Question I'd love to hear is, if you could go back and talk to, say, 13, 14-year-old Zach, what's some advice you would give to yourself?
Ooh, I would say, that's a hard guy. I don't know how deep you want me to get.
It's not necessarily about changing anything.
I'm not going to get super deep, but I will say, me at 13, 14, there was a lot of shit going on. So 13, 14-year-old me, I think, just needed a hug. And I think it needed to say, like, okay, like, you just need to get through the next, like, 4 years. Yeah. And then, like, it's going to be okay. Because I won't go into my whole, like, family drama, but, like, there was a big, like, family tragedy, like, when I was around that age. And it sort of caused, you know, when, like, chaos is happening for everyone in their family, you can kind of get lost in the scuffle because everyone's, like, obviously trying to take care of themselves, too. That plus, like, my parents getting into religion and me knowing I'm gay and me going, oh, fuck, no, you can't get religious because then this isn't going to work. Yeah, I think 14-year-old me just need to say, like, you are you. You know who you are. You've known who you are since you were, you know, 6 years old, dancing to Rhythm of the Night in your kiddie pool, making your top into a crop top. Like, you knew who you were. I knew who I was. I knew I loved the Spice Girls. I knew that I always looked at women in movies, but never sexually. Like, you know, why do I care about a bored housewife in a movie? Like, why am I more focused on her than the guy who's the astronaut who's gonna, like, go to the moon? I knew who I was. And so I think I just need to be told, you are not weird, and you're not, yeah, you're kind of gay, but that's not a bad thing. You don't have to even come to terms with that. You can just say, well, that's not even a bad trait to have. So I just would have wanted to have the foresight to say, I know you can't even imagine a world where being gay is okay, but that's just because of where you've grown up. And if you grew up in a different place, you might have a completely different life right now. Just keep being yourself and know that you just need to get old enough that you can be allowed to make your own choices for your life, and then you can leave all this behind, which I did.
That is beautiful. It really does, you know, my life has only gotten better, you know, since I've come out. Even with the hard things, I couldn't imagine, oh my God, still being in the closet and, like, I don't know, hating or fearing myself.
Yeah,
it really does transform. If you can love yourself.
Oh, for sure. Like, even my last ex, I mean, I never thought this is a bad trait, but he was still coming to terms with his sexuality and, like, coming out to family and stuff. And it was really hard for me to, like, be there for him as a partner, because it would trigger things in myself of, like, well, I don't want to be closeted. So if you want me to be closeted for you, I can't do that. And then you also, when you are taking care of someone else so much, you don't take care of yourself in the way of, like, well, how is this making you feel? Like, I encourage everyone to come out of the closet. And obviously, it's, you know, everyone has their own journey with it, and not everyone's gonna be ready at the same time. I was sort of forced to come out, or I was kind of, like, outed before I even, like, was probably fully ready to say anything. I remember I hooked up with this guy that I went to high school with. And of course, he was a shady queen. And, like, Monday morning, he went and told, like, you know, five of his close friends, and they told a million other people. And I only found out because someone came up to me and said, hey, I know this probably isn't even true, but did you hook up with this person? And I thought, oh, fuck, now I'm out. Like, I guess now I'm out. Because once that happened, there's no way to be like, oh, no, I was just hanging out at the obviously gay kid's house and stayed the night and we didn't hook up. Like, you know, it was gonna be harder to, like, shove that back into the closet. So I was left with the closet overflowing in front of me and going, okay, I guess this is gonna be it. So, you know.
Well, it looks like you have taken that closet that exploded and turned it into a garden of roses.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's absolutely something to be commended.
Oh, thank you.
So we're going to move into our final section of the podcast. Ooh. And it's a section called Passions Lately.
Oh.
Oh, my.
All right. It's very simple, Zach. What have you been passionate about lately? What's doing it for you?
Well, of course, my podcast, but we've already talked about that a lot.
Please do again. Let them know where they can listen.
Oh, sure. I don't know if that was later. Yeah. Of course, I've been podcasts in another world. You can find me on Instagram at Another World Pod or on Twitter at IAW Podcasts. It's available to download wherever if you just want to come for a fun time. Cool, cool. But that's great.
And I'm going to be on an episode this week.
Actually, yeah, on July.
Or in the past.
July.
No, no.
15th. It'll be July 15th. His episode will come out. And it's actually really good. Actually, I think it's my favorite episode of the show so far. Just because, like, the game worked out so well. And you were like, we had, like, a nice flow. It was a fun time. But when I'm not working on my podcast, I'm trying to just allow myself to, like, watch things. Because sometimes I work so much on editing and stuff that I'm not even, like... I also remember my podcast is about pop culture. If I'm not watching pop culture, I'm not getting inspired. And so, you know, because you can only pull from the references in your brain for so long before you just need to be, like, taken somewhere else. So I have been watching a weird mixed bag of things. So I've been obsessed with the HBO Max series Legendary, which is all about the New York ball culture.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been watching it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm obsessed with the House of Len Van.
I have the last episode left to go. Unfortunately know the results of everything, and so I'm not going to say anything.
I know I'm rooting for House of Len Van.
Other than I love House of Len Van as well.
And I love Erica. Erica is like a bomb bitch. I just,
she's the face.
She's like a real life Electra abundance. Like, I just, yeah, all right, just amazing.
And the judges. I'm obsessed with the judges that show. I think the way that they speak and the way that they critique, the way that they keep it 100, even when they don't agree.
Oh, I love they'll chop someone. They're like, nope, you're chopped. And other people are like, oh, you're crazy. And they're like, I didn't feel it. I wasn't feeling it.
They're like, I didn't see 3 mice. Show me mice. I didn't see mice.
And I gotta say, when they all agree and go like 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, it's when I am, as an audience member, the most like, oh my God, holy shit. So it must be a thing. But so like, I've been watching that. I've been watching Unsolved Mysteries. That's like awoken a whole true crime part of me that I forgot that I was so obsessed with, because I don't usually get into like as much true crime stuff as other people seem to in the world right now, but once I get into it again, it becomes like a whole journey. So yeah, I don't know, just trying to like stay inspired. My main thing is watching new things, because I am the king of rewatches. You know, I will scroll through a menu for 30 minutes and be like, ugh, I'm just going to watch Clueless. And, you know, like, what am I doing? Or like, why am I watching Sex in the City again? Like, I've watched every season of that show. Like, Sex in the City, it's more about, oh, cool, I think I've only seen this episode, like, maybe, like, 5 times. I think I'm gonna watch this one. Like, it's a show.
It's just a really good episode, though. It's
really good, you know, even though, ugh, there are some blemishes on that show. But, yeah. Just trying to find new things to watch. I'm always trying to have other people tell me what to watch, because I can't be left to my own devices.
What I've been passionate about lately is, and it's really fun because my partner is a couple years younger than I, and I love it. He doesn't know his history of gay culture the same that I do. His background is just a lot more conservative, a lot more religious in upbringing. And so as a result, he just knows a little bit less of it than I do. Mm. And something that I have been sharing with him lately, Kennedy Center Honors performances. Yes. And we've just sort of been going through them. And I'm freaking obsessed. They're probably my favorite thing on the planet, Kennedy Center Honors.
It's like I'm talking to myself right now, I guess.
I'm obsessed
with this.
Last night we watched, because I've also been working my way through Las Culturistas podcast.
Love that show.
Their 200th episode spectacular, yeah. That list. I am finally in like the top 20 moments of culture that they're doing. It's been 4 hours. It's insane.
I love it.
But they mentioned this performance, and it was the one we decided to watch last night. Barbara Cook's Kennedy Center Honors performance. And we did not mention her in the Divas episode, which we were remiss to have missed her.
What a crime.
You know?
Oh, I've watched that so many times.
Doing Losing My Mind.
Oh my God. And they cut to Anne Hathaway in the crowd, and she's like tearing up and just like applauding. Like, oh, no.
That's where she got the Oscar performance motivation. I'm telling
now,
you.
Now, do you know the trivia about that performance? About the deleted performer?
Oh, honey, there was a, who was deleted? The,
I don't even know her name because I had not heard of her before. I think that was kind of, I guess, the point. But there was this one opera performer that was hired to come and sing Glitter and Be Gay. And actually, when they go into Glenn Close, if you look at the shot of when she's walking on stage, there's a woman walking towards the back of the stage with gloves on, like opera gloves, that like is not in the dark. That is not the performer from what you see before Glenn Close. It was someone that was like sandwiched between. They just like hacked it out. And even at the end, when they do the slow pan of all the performers down the line, just when they're about to get to her, they cut away to the wide shot again. So you never see her up close.
Yeah, is that crazy? I'm going back in and I am digging deep.
I can't remember who comes before Glenn Close. I think in the way you watch it, I think it's like, Will He Like Me? I think maybe that's what's right before Glenn Close.
That's insane.
Yeah, look.
I cannot believe it.
Yeah, when Glenn Close is walking up, look right to the like right of her. You'll see a woman with a white gown, floor-length gown, and opera gloves and like brown hair. That's the woman, yeah.
I'm so glad I brought this up because that's the tape.
I love stuff like that, right?
Also, Aretha Franklin and Janelle Monáe at Carole King's honors. When Aretha performs Natural Woman, she's in that giant fur coat playing the piano.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, she stops, has her moment to take the coat off, and you know it's going to. I love it because Carole King, even in that moment, like completely let herself have the abandon and is just like, you go.
Yeah, she's like, sing my fucking song better than I think I could ever sing it, you know. Have you watched the Carol Burnett Kennedy Center Honors?
Yep. I think that one is the one I've watched the most.
I love it. I just love it.
Barbara Cooks would be probably second.
You know what else is a really good one? Is the one for Yo-Yo Ma. It just ends with James Taylor. It just like all these different artists interpreting Yo-Yo Ma's music. And then the end is James Taylor singing Here Comes the Sun with this like children's choir. And like if you don't at least get a tear in your eye.
I have heard that recording. Yeah. I have heard a recording of that performance, but I've never
seen
it.
Because they cut to Michelle Obama, and she's just, like, inconsolable, crying, and it's just, oh, it's so good.
And it's just beautiful. Yeah. Also, you know, this is one of the places where Beyonce's given me... I'm not a huge Beyonce stan, but...
don't tell any of the gays. Yeah,
don't tell the world.
I liked her in Dreamgirls.
But... yeah, she was great. But listen, she gave my favorite performance at the Kennedy Center. She did, it was for Tina Turner. She did a performance for hers. And it's killer.
I also liked her singing The Way We Were for Barbara Streisand.
Correct. Oh, man, that was good.
It was like, it was probably my favorite performance from that thing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, with that, I think we're going to bring things to a close. Okay. I don't think that there's much left to say.
I've said enough.
No, I loved it. You have been a fantastic guest, Zachary. Just one more time, let people know about your podcast, where to find it.
Of course, yeah. It's called In Another World. You can find it on Instagram at In Another World Pod or at Twitter at IAW Podcast. And yeah, it's on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, pretty much everything now. It comes out every Wednesday. And I've also been releasing little mini episodes talking about RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 5. And those usually come out either late Saturday or Sunday morning. Like when you wake up on Sunday, it'll be there. So yeah.
You are just pumping them out and it's very inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so happy that you were able to be here. I'm so happy that I was able to be a guest on In Another World.
I'm sure I'll have you back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have plenty to talk
about.
This
is going to continue for sure. Well, our final question for the pod. What is the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy?
Oh, I know what it is. Getting to watch the original cast of Hamilton perform Hamilton, like just that was such a magical experience. I mean, holy cow. I mean, that was just the last, like I forgot the world for 2 hours and just was like, oh my God, look at them. And watching a Renee Elise Goldsberry do Satisfied and just living my gay life. Like me and my roommate were just like yelling at TV, like, yes, work. Like, you know, it was a lot.
The performance, the caliber performance that everybody gave for that recording was unbelievable. And what I will say for Disney is they have the budget to hire the absolute best people at their jobs, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean that from the crew who recorded yeah. it. You know, the way that they recorded that show was phenomenal. Oh, I know they did it over you know, many different yeah, takes. Yeah. It was like a master cut of like five different performances.
Even that blows my mind because you would never know.
There is a spot that you're gonna know, and I'm gonna spoil something for you. And it is in our favorite song, Satisfied.
No, stop.
If you watch the song Satisfied, there is a brooch in the middle of her chest uh-huh. that appears and disappears and reappears again oh. several times.
Oh, okay. Oh, I guess I'll watch Satisfied again to see if it does that.
I mean, if you're gonna
see,
make
it shows
me.
How good she is though, because I was just like, yeah, it's work.
I know.
Fuck the brooch.
Absolutely. I had a bootleg version of it from years ago, so I'd seen it before, but of course this version, it's apples and oranges. Yeah. They don't even compare.
And Philippa Sue, know, also a
professional
phenomenal
version. Philippa Sue, I'm so I love her.
Yeah, she makes
I love
me her smile. So much, and she I, makes my soul smile.
Yeah, me too. Leslie Odom Jr. is my hero in that, though.
Ooh, yeah, and also I wanted to be Christopher Jackson's husband. I was just like, mm-hmm. I want him to hug me and be like, come on, baby.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on Eye to Eye today, Zachary Landell.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for being here with us. Now go outside. We'll be here and gayer when you get back. This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman, and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.